We're looking at Isaiah chapter 40 from verses 27 to 31. So over to Izzy for the reading, and then Tim will come straight up and speak.
Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles, and shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
Testing, testing. Yep, all good. Great. Well, thanks so much for coming down this evening as we continue our summer small group series in the book of Isaiah. I think it's fair to say we've had some really useful times together over these last few weeks as we dwell on God's character. So yeah, hopefully a bit more of the same this evening, despite all the heat, as we look at these last few verses of chapter 40. So the issue at the heart of our passage this evening is, how do we cope in our Christian lives when we feel weary and exhausted? How do we cope when we feel like we're flagging to the point of potentially giving up altogether? Well, in our passage this evening, Isaiah will show us how we can get our strength renewed so that we persevere and eventually make it to the finish line. Well, talking of finish lines, the Marathon des Sables is widely renowned as the toughest ultramarathon on earth, held each year in the Sahara Desert. If anyone would like to participate, the race involves running 250 kilometers across 7 days, surviving temperatures up to 50 degrees Celsius. I think we know that even 37 degrees is pretty bad. And given the desert location, you'd be running exclusively on sand. Well, as if that wasn't tempting enough, the race also requires you to be self-sufficient, carrying 7 days of clothes and food rations every step of the way. Well, if you're interested in running in next year's edition, I'm told that Tom Bernardo has volunteered himself, so please speak to him for more details. But just picture the situation for a moment. You've been crazy enough to sign up. You've just about got yourself through day one, and after a terrible night's sleep, you're getting ready to set off on day two. But as you roll up your camping mat and finish packing your bag, you start to notice that your motivation is dwindling. You've already got blisters on every single toe. Your stomach hasn't taken too kindly to the previous night's dinner. It's summer, so you're gutted to be missing a week of summer small groups. But worst of all, you know that you've got another 6 days of relentless pain ahead of you. And in that moment, you're understandably flagging. That finish line on day seven just feels too far away and too difficult to get to. You start to consider whether it might just be better to throw in the towel. Well, I guess that's quite an extreme sort of physical example, but I wonder if some of us can be tempted to feel that way in the Christian life. We might ask, is it all really worth it? Do we have what it takes to get to the finish line? We know firsthand that living counterculturally can be really tiring. It's hard to be distinctive in the office. It's hard when sharing the gospel can make friendships go cold. Maybe we're burdened by life circumstances and fearful for the future. And all of this can make us feel quite weary, quite vulnerable in our faith. And throwing in the towel can feel like quite a realistic option. Well, that is exactly the frame of mind that tonight's passage speaks into. Isaiah is dealing with the distress and doubt of a people who felt abandoned by God. As we've seen in recent weeks, the Israelites had every right to feel like they were going through the mill. It had been foretold that their land would be invaded, they would be exiled to Babylon. Life would be pretty hard for them. They would face opposition, cultural assimilation, great persecution. The culmination of all these circumstances meant that this was a people on the verge of giving up on God altogether. And it's out of this helpless desperation that we get these stinging words in verse 27. Here's the Israelites' complaint. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God. So this is a cry of a people feeling abandoned by God. After all, how could God possibly allow them to be going through such difficulties when they were meant to be God's chosen people? How could God possibly give Israel this everlasting kingdom when the Israelites would be slaves in a foreign land? We see from the Israelites' complaint that they really felt that God had let them down. It's almost like he wasn't sort of really aware of the circumstances, too busy with other things. These soul-weary people were thinking about giving up on God altogether. And maybe we feel like that at the moment when we look at our lives and the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Perhaps we just wonder, does God really care? How can he possibly be interested in those sort of nitty-gritty daily practical struggles that we face? Well, let's hand the microphone back to Isaiah to see his comeback. Isaiah's response to the complaint is, hang on, guys, hold your horses. We need to remember who we're talking about here. Verse 28, have you not known, have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not grow faint or weary. His understanding is unsearchable. So to the despondent Christian, Isaiah shouts, look up, because he wants us to shift our attention away from ourselves and our own problems and onto God and his character. Firstly, Isaiah reminds his readers that God is eternal. The Lord is the everlasting God. It's an idea that we're probably quite familiar with, the idea of God being eternal, but it's nonetheless a hard one to properly wrap our heads around. I'm sure some of us at varying points at school were the proud owner of one of those wooden rulers that also doubles up as a kind of like mini history timeline. You get different versions. I think there's like past UK kings and queens, there's geological time periods, England football managers. The one I've got at home that I was meant to bring in was UK prime ministers. And if your history of knowledge is as patchy as mine, it can be a little bit depressing looking at that long list of names and not even recognising the vast majority. But there are some pretty big names on there, whether it's Churchill, Thatcher, Chamberlain. I think Tony Blair was the latest on there, so it's a bit out of date. But it's quite striking how when we look at the bigger picture of the last century, or even the last sort of 20, 30 years, even the most iconic and sort of heavyweight political figures, they're really just a flash in the pan. We saw this last week, didn't we, when Isaiah was referring to world leaders and princes. Scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth when he blows on them and they wither, and the tempest carries them off like stubble. It's a great reminder of how even the most powerful men and women in the world, they're here one day, gone the next. Well, imagine for Christmas, to your slight dismay, Santa gets you a wooden ruler. Just what you've always wanted. The theme is not British prime ministers or US presidents, but rulers of the universe. I wonder how many names would be engraved on that ruler. Well, all it would say is God, from the beginning of time to the end of time. God is everlasting, and his care over his people has never changed and will never change. And therefore, it's very much appropriate for Isaiah to refer to God as Lord, Yahweh in Hebrew, to remind us that this is the covenant God who has an everlasting love for his people. Next thing that Isaiah reminds us about God is that he is the creator of the ends of the earth. He made it all from those beautiful mountain valleys that we see plastered on Instagram, all the way down to the most remote unexplored parts of Antarctica. Absolutely nothing is out of God's reach. He designed it all. And the implication is that he also sustains everything as well. He's what keeps us breathing day to day. So to the weary Israelite feeling distant from God, Isaiah says that if God created all of these things, then surely he can care for his people as well. Thirdly, God is unwearying. Not sure if that's even a word, but let's go with it. Verse 28, he does not faint or grow weary. God is an inexhaustible source of strength. And we have to admit what a contrast that is to us, to ourselves. I don't know how many people whose favourite chocolate bar is a Snickers, but what Snickers arguably lack on the taste front, they certainly compensate for with their pithy marketing slogans. I'm sure we've all seen some of their adverts. I think my favourite one is where you've got the Kung Fu Warriors on some kind of secret mission in enemy territory, and they're doing parkour, jumping from rooftop to rooftop. And unfortunately, one member of their group is depicted by Mr. Bean, who, for all of his great strengths, is probably not the kind of guy that you want on a covert secret mission. Anyway, in true clumsy Mr. Bean style, he ends up falling through the roof of one of these houses. But as he's surrounded by enemy guards, one of his crew throws him a Snickers bar, and after taking one bite out of that bar, he miraculously turns into the Kung Fu warrior that he was always meant to be. And the advert then ends with the very apt punchline of, "You're not you when you're hungry." A very silly advert, but I think most of us can probably relate quite well to the sentiment that we are so easily wearied, so easily put off course, and sometimes all it takes is having an empty stomach. Well, the same certainly cannot be said for God. Isaiah reminds us that God is an endless fountain of strength that we can always depend on, never grows faint, never grows weary. Fourth point that Isaiah makes is that no one can fully understand God's thinking. Let's have a look at the end of verse 28. His understanding is unsearchable. So Isaiah is saying to the Israelites that you'll never fully comprehend God's thinking, because whilst human knowledge is finite, even the greatest human minds have their limits, God's wisdom, his mind, has no limits. And of course, what Isaiah says here might feel like a little bit of a cop-out, but Isaiah is not saying that God is unknowable. God has revealed to us in the Bible everything that matters, everything that we need to know for this life. But we can't know everything, and so Isaiah says it shouldn't surprise us when we come up against mystery. We'll never entirely understand God's plans because our minds are limited. So we've seen quite a few contrasts, haven't we, between God and between ourselves. We've seen that God is eternal, we're locked in time. We've seen that he has boundless energy, we grow tired. He has fathomless wisdom, we get confused. These verses show us that God is really big, really powerful. There's a little bit more to Isaiah's comeback than just a bit of a refresher on God's character, a sort of theological crash course. For the soul-weary Christian on the verge of throwing in the towel, the antidote is not only to remember that God is big and wise and powerful, it's to know that God actively wants to help his people through restoring their strength. I've looked down at the amazing promise of these verses. God gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. So Isaiah gives us a wonderful picture here of a God who wants to offer out a hand of comfort to bring his people off the floor, out of a state of despair. Well, as if it wasn't clear enough why we need God's strength, just consider the image of verse 30 for a second. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. I'm told the reference to young men literally refers to selected men. This is a picture of the strongest, most athletic specimens of humankind. So think Olympic athletes, SAS soldiers. These are the true elite of human physicality. And yet Isaiah says that even these individuals will grow faint and weary. The message is pretty clear, isn't it? That humans, even at their strongest, are weak. And this physical picture also points to a spiritual reality, that humans are prone to stumbling and cannot complete the journey of the Christian life on our own. Can be a great temptation, can't it, for us to think that our own strength will sustain us in the long haul. But Isaiah is saying that even the strongest will fail. I don't think anyone here is going to be selected for the Olympics anytime soon. I might be wrong. I don't think anyone here is going to be joining the SAS grad scheme in September. So how much more does this then apply for us? The challenges thrown up in the Christian life, whether it's pressures from family, friends, colleagues, battling sin, illness, the pressure of life will inevitably wear us down. But wonderfully in these verses, we see that God promises to impart something of his own strength to us, a kind of transfusion of his own strength. But what would it actually look like for us to be strengthened by God? If we look down at verse 31, "But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles." So this will be our spiritual experience if we put our trust in God. We'll have this experience of effortless flight. Perhaps this feels relatable in the context of when we first became Christians, that initial euphoria of basking in our newfound identity as forgiven sinners. Or maybe perhaps on a Sunday when we're struck afresh by God's character and feel a new wave of assurance amidst difficult life circumstances. Maybe we feel like we're soaring when a colleague who's shown such hostility to the gospel out of nowhere accepts an invitation to a gospel event. But when it comes to the idea of soaring like an eagle, I guess a lot of us might be thinking, well, that's all well and good. Sure, that will look lovely and feel lovely. But bar the sort of odd exception, that's not really our experience day to day in the Christian life. Our experience can feel much less of an eagle soaring and more one of a geriatric pigeon sort of flapping like crazy, trying to get a few inches off the ground, desperately trying to keep afloat in the Christian life, desperately trying not to be put off course. So how can we have a bit more of the eagle soaring experience and a little less of the geriatric pigeon? Well, Isaiah reminds us that this mounting with wings like eagles is not something that we do in our own strength. But this strength comes from God and God alone. So we need to stop trying to flap our own wings and hope and putting our hopes in our own efforts and instead rely on God. God's strength will not only enable us to soar. Verse 31 says, "They shall run and not be weary." The word run occurs two other times in the book of Isaiah. And both times it's used not just in the context of making a journey or running a race, but of being sort of magnetically drawn to a destination. So God's strength will draw us to the end and it will get us to the moment when we come face to face with Jesus. Finally, God's strength will help us to walk. "They shall walk and not faint." Kind of feels like a bit of an anticlimax, doesn't it? We've gone from soaring like an eagle to running, now walking. But I guess Isaiah keeps things refreshingly realistic, because when things get tough, sometimes life can be just about putting one foot in front of the other. And as we persevere, even if it's at a walking pace, eventually in God's strength, we'll cover the distance. So we've seen how much we need God's strength, and we've seen what we need God's strength for, but how exactly do we sort of access this strength? What's the cheat code that's going to allow us to unlock this endless stockpile of endurance? Isaiah says, "Those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength." Now, there's maybe a danger that we think waiting for the Lord can be very much a passive activity, in the way that we might be slumped at the bus stop waiting for the number 34 bus. So what does waiting for the Lord actually look like day to day? Well, it's a highly active endeavor that involves both turning and trusting. Firstly, turning. Isaiah is clear that we need to turn away from trusting ourselves. Just going back to our opening question, what do we think the world would say to a downcast, soul-weary individual? In a society that prides itself on individual empowerment, when we're struggling in life, we might be told to dig deep, learn some resilience, realign our dreams, download the latest mindfulness app, cultivate gratitude, adjust our diet, keep a journal, have a social media detox, get more exercise, try the latest supplement, make more time for our passions. The list of all these life hacks is potentially endless, isn't it? But these verses remind us that anything we do out of human strength will always be limited. The source of ultimate strength won't come from within us, but from outside of us, from God. And he very much wants to give that strength to us. So we need to recognise that we can't get through the Christian life on our own. And of course, with where we are in salvation history, we're in the very privileged position of having heard these words from Jesus in Matthew 11. Come to me, all who labour and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. So Jesus repeats the invitation to replace our weakness with his strength. So as we turn away from trusting ourselves, we can instead confidently trust God to keep his promises. God has promised so much to us through Jesus' death at the cross, a new heart, a new future, adoption into God's family, and I guess most poignantly, given the state of the Israelites, eternal rest with Jesus. So finally, how will we deal with feeling weary in the Christian life? Will we follow the Israelites in complaining against God, or even try to take matters into our own hands and do things in our own strength? Well, the warning of Isaiah 40 is that leads to weariness and stumbling. Or will we deal with weariness in God's way, getting a renewed vision of his greatness through fixing our eyes on him and waiting eagerly on the promises he's made to us? Isaiah says that this is the way to refreshment. If we turn from trusting ourselves to trusting God, the promise here is that he will renew our strength out of his unlimited resources. It's incredible, isn't it, how the everlasting creator of the universe promises to renew our strength. He openly offers to help us from his own resources. Isaiah 40 gives a picture of a really big, really kind God. So whatever happens over the next few weeks, months, years, we can hold on to the truth that God really does care for his people as he shares his power with us. Well, that's probably enough from me. I think we've got about 30 minutes now to dive into those discussion questions. So 30 minutes to chat through those, try and make some time for prayer as well, and then we'll wrap up at 8 o'clock.